It had the added benefit of a flashlight under the barrel. We had not expected to have to open that particular container so soon, and although none of us protested, I felt a new tension between us. We knew that members of the second expedition to Area X had committed suicide by gunshot, and members of the third had shot each other. Not until several subsequent expeditions had suffered zero casualties had our superiors issued firearms again. We were the 12th expedition. So we returned to the tower, all four of us. Sunlight came down, dappled through the moss and leaves, created archipelagos of light on the flat surface of the entrance. It remained unremarkable, inert, in no way ominous, and yet it took an act of will to stand there, staring at the entry point. I noticed the anthropologist checking her black box, was relieved to see it did not display a glowing red light. If it had, we would have had to abort our exploration, move on to other things. I did not want that, despite the touch of fear. "How deep do you think it goes down?" the anthropologist asked.
"Remember that we are to put our faith in your measurements," the psychologist answered with a slight frown. "The measurements do not lie. This structure is 61.4 feet in diameter. It is raised 7.9 inches from the ground. The stairwell appears to have been positioned at or close to due north, which may tell us something about its creation eventually. It is made of stone and coquina, not of metal or of bricks. These are facts. That it wasn't on the maps means only that a storm may have uncovered the entrance." I found the psychologist's faith in measurements and her rationalization for the tower's absence from maps oddly endearing. Perhaps she meant merely to reassure us, but I would like to believe she was trying to reassure herself. Her position, to lead and possibly to know more than us, must have been difficult and lonely.
"I hope it's only about 6 feet deep so we can continue mapping," the surveyor said, trying to be light-hearted. But then she and we all recognized the term 6 feet under, ghosting through her syntax, and a silence settled over us.
"I want you to know that I cannot stop thinking of it as a tower," I confessed. "I can't see it as a tunnel." It seemed important to make the distinction before our descent, even if it influenced their evaluation of my mental state. I saw a tower plunging into the ground. The thought that we stood at its summit made me a little dizzy. All three stared at me then, as if I were the strange cry at dusk, and after a moment the psychologist said, grudgingly,
"If that helps make you more comfortable, then I don't see the harm."
A silence came over us again, there under the canopy of trees. A beetle spiraled up toward the branches, trailing dust motes. I think we all realized that only now had we truly entered Area X.
"I'll go first and see what's down there," the surveyor said finally, and we were happy to defer to her.
The initial stairwell curved steeply downward, and the steps were narrow, so the surveyor would have to back her way into the tower. We used sticks to clear the spider webs as she lowered herself into position on the stairwell. She teetered there, weapon slung across her back, looking up at us. She had tied her hair back, and it made the lines of her face seem tight and drawn. Was this the moment when we were supposed to stop her, to come up with some other plan? If so, none of us had the nerve. With a strange smirk, almost as if judging us, the surveyor descended until we could only see her face, framed in the gloom below, and then, not even that. She left an empty space that was shocking to me, as if the reverse had actually happened, as if a face had suddenly floated into view out of the darkness. I gasped, which drew a stare from the psychologist. The anthropologist was too busy staring down into the stairwell to notice any of it. "Is everything okay?" the psychologist called out to the surveyor. Everything had been fine just a second before. Why would anything be different now? The surveyor made a sharp grunt in answer, as if agreeing with me. For a few moments more, we could still hear the surveyor struggling on those short steps. Then came silence. And then another movement, at a different rhythm, which for a terrifying moment seemed like it might come from a second source. But then the surveyor called up to us.
Clear to this level.
This level? Something within me thrilled to the fact that my vision of a tower was not yet disproven. That was the signal for me to descend with the anthropologist while the psychologist stood watch. Time to go, the psychologist said, as perfunctorily as if we were in school and a class was letting out. An emotion that I could not quite identify surged through me, and for a moment I saw dark spots in my field of vision. I followed the anthropologist so eagerly down through the remains of webs and the embalmed husks of insects into the cool brackishness of that place that I almost tripped her. My last view of the world above, the psychologist peering down at me with a slight frown, and behind her the trees, the blue of the sky, almost blinding against the darkness of the sides of the stairwell. Below, shadows spread across the walls. The temperature dropped, and sound became muffled, the soft steps absorbing our tread. Approximately 20 feet beneath the surface, the structure opened out into a lower level. The ceiling was about 8 feet high, which meant a good 12 feet of stone lay above us. The flashlight of the surveyor's assault rifle illuminated the space, but she was faced away from us, surveying the walls, which were an off-white and devoid of any adornment. A few cracks indicated either the passage of time or some sudden stressor. The level appeared to be the same circumference as the exposed top, which again supported the idea of a single solid structure buried in the earth.
"It goes farther,"
the surveyor said, and pointed with her rifle to the far corner, directly opposite the opening where we had come out onto that level. A rounded archway stood there, and a darkness that suggested downward steps. A tower which made this level not so much a floor as a landing or part of the turret. She started to walk toward the archway while I was still engrossed in examining the walls with my flashlight. Their very blankness mesmerized me. I tried to imagine the builder of this place, but could not. I thought again of the silhouette of the lighthouse, as I had seen it during the late afternoon on our first day at base camp. We assumed that the structure in question was a lighthouse, because the map showed a lighthouse at that location, and because everyone immediately recognized what a lighthouse should look like. In fact, the surveyor and anthropologist had both expressed a kind of relief when they had seen the lighthouse. Its appearance on both the map and in reality reassured them, anchored them. Being familiar with its function further reassured them. With the tower, we knew none of these things. We could not intuit its full outline. We had no sense of its purpose. And now that we had begun to descend into it, the tower still failed to reveal any hint of these things. The psychologist might recite the measurements of the top of the tower, but those numbers meant nothing, had no wider context. Without context, clinging to those numbers was a form of madness. There is a regularity to the circle, seen from the inside walls, that suggests precision in the creation of the building, the anthropologist said. The building. Already she had begun to abandon the idea of it being a tunnel. All of my thoughts came spilling out of my mouth, some final discharge from the state that had overtaken me above. But what is its purpose? And is it believable that it would not be on the maps? Could one of the prior expeditions have built it and hidden it? I asked all of this and more, not expecting an answer. Even though no threat had revealed itself, it seemed important to eliminate any possible moment of silence. As if somehow the blankness of the walls fed off of silence, and that something might appear in the spaces between our words if we were not careful. Had I expressed this anxiety to the psychologist, she would have been worried, I know, but I was more attuned to solitude than any of us, and I would have characterized that place in that moment of our exploration as watchful. A gasp from the surveyor cut me off in mid-question, no doubt much to the anthropologist's relief.
Look, the surveyor said, training her flashlight down in the archway. We hurried over and stared past her, adding our own illumination. A stairway did indeed lead down, this time at a gentle curve with much broader steps, but still made of the same materials. At about shoulder height, perhaps 5 feet high, clinging to the inner wall of the tower, I saw what I first took to be dimly sparkling green vines progressing down into the darkness. I had a sudden absurd memory of the floral wallpaper treatment that had lined the bathroom of my house when I had shared it with my husband. Then, as I stared, the vines resolved further, and I saw that they were words, in cursive, the letters raised about 6 inches off the wall. "Hold the light," I said, and pushed past them down the first few steps. Blood was rushing through my head again, a roaring confusion in my ears. It was an act of supreme control to walk those few paces. I couldn't tell you what impulse drove me, except that I was the biologist and this looked oddly organic. If the linguist had been there, perhaps I would have deferred to her.
"Don't touch it, whatever it is," the anthropologist warned.
I nodded, but I was too enthralled with the discovery. If I'd had the impulse to touch the words on the wall, I would not have been able to stop myself. As I came close, did it surprise me that I could understand the language the words were written in? Yes. Did it fill me with a kind of elation and dread intertwined? Yes. I tried to suppress the 1,000 new questions rising up inside of me. In as calm a voice as I could manage, aware of the importance of that moment, I read from the beginning aloud. "Where lies the strangling fruit that came from the hand of the sinner, I shall bring forth the seeds of the dead to share with the worms that..." Then the darkness took it.
"Words? Words?" the anthropologist said.
"Yes, words."
"What are they made of?"
the surveyor asked. Did they need to be made of anything? The illumination cast on the continuing sentence quavered and shook. "Where lies the strangling fruit?" became bathed in shadow and in light, as if a battle raged for its meaning.
"Give me a moment. I need to get closer."
Did I? Yes, I needed to get closer. What are they made of? I hadn't even thought of this, though I should have. I was still trying to parse the lingual meaning, had not transitioned to the idea of taking a physical sample. But what relief at the question, because it helped me fight the compulsion to keep reading, to descend into the greater darkness and keep descending until I had read all there was to read. Already those initial phrases were infiltrating my mind in unexpected ways, finding fertile ground. So I stepped closer, peered at "Where lies the strangling fruit?" I saw that the letters, connected by their cursive script, were made from what would have looked to the layperson like rich green fern-like moss, but in fact was probably a type of fungi or other eukaryotic organism. The curling filaments were all packed very close together and rising out from the wall. A loamy smell came from the words, along with an underlying hint of rotting honey. This miniature forest swayed, almost imperceptibly, like seagrass in a gentle ocean current. Other things existed in this miniature ecosystem, half hidden by the green filaments. Most of these creatures were translucent and shaped like tiny hands embedded by the base of the palm. Golden nodules capped the fingers on these hands. I leaned in closer, like a fool, like someone who had not had months of survival training or ever studied biology.